stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, November 24th. Shoppers react to being surveilled at the Fashion Valley Mall. More on that next, but first, the headlines. There's now a second way for people who are enrolled in Sentry or Global Entry to cross into the U.S. at the San Ysidro Port of Entry. The UT says the new access route begins on Tijuana's Calle Segunda and has two lanes that will be open daily from 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. The newspaper reports that the change is part of a four-month pilot program. In other travel news, the busy holiday travel season is officially underway at the San Diego International Airport. The airport is expecting a 2-3% increase in travelers over last Thanksgiving. But with the new Terminal 1 now open, airport spokesperson Nicole Hall says things should go more smoothly than they used to.
So even though we're going to have more people, we're hoping that people won't feel that push. In the old Terminal 1, you really did feel it because it was cramped. Now we have this beautiful terminal that's spacious.
Hall says to make sure to check with your airline on flight status before coming to the airport and to arrive to the airport at least 2 hours before your departure time. A very special belated happy birthday goes out to Hannah Shirley. Hannah turned 52 on Saturday. She is the oldest pygmy hippo living in managed care. Brilliantly, her birthday party theme was Hungry Hungry Hippo. Her 13,000 square foot habitat featured floating fruit and colorful decorations inspired by the board game. Hannah was rescued from a residential backyard in Escondido in 2022. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, presenting Ginger Minj's Holiday Spectacular on December 5th and 6th at UC San Diego's Epstein Family Amphitheater. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
We aired a KPBS investigation last week that found law enforcement agencies in San Diego were searching automatic license plate readers owned by private businesses. Reporter Scott Rodd spoke to shoppers at the Fashion Valley Mall to get their reaction.
The cameras capture the license plate, make, and model of every car that drives by. They can analyze patterns of movement and potential connections between drivers. Dozens of businesses and homeowners associations around San Diego allow law enforcement to search through data from their license plate readers with virtually no oversight. Police say people shouldn't be worried, and probably aren't.
I don't think too many people are concerned, if we're honest.
Commander Christopher Lawrence is with the San Diego County Sheriff's Office.
I think people go about their days just trying to get their own lives handled, and they're not always worried about some of the periphery that goes on.
KPBS went to Fashion Valley Mall to find out. The shopping center gives police access to its license plate readers. We spoke to several shoppers. None of them knew about the mall's Flock system, but they all wanted to learn more. 55-year-old Gilberto Corneman believes the arrangement improves public safety.
I appreciate what they're doing. Why? Because of safety. And it's good for the city, the state.
Others expressed concerns. 29-year-old Alexa Sandoval used to work at the mall and saw shoplifting firsthand. She understood the upside of giving police access to the system.
I've worked here at the store. We've had a lot of theft and, like, people just coming in and, like, you know, having like a getaway car and things like that. So I think in terms of like helping find the people who are actually creating crimes here at the mall, I think it's a good idea.
But now, as a consumer, she's not so sure.
If we're not really doing anything wrong here, do they really need to have all of our information?
46-year-old Phil Rivas expressed serious reservations about the camera-sharing arrangement.
Here in the United States, we want as privacy as much as possible and transparency. It seems like people, you know, companies or corporations are going out of their way to just validate, not give us that privacy.
Rivas supports helping law enforcement solve crimes, but he thinks customers should know about the technology being used. Simon Property Group, which owns Fashion Valley Mall, did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Other businesses that share their license plate data include Home Depot, Lowe's, the Southwestern Yacht Club, and homeowners associations. San Diego Police Captain Charles Lara says consumers always have the option to shop elsewhere.
If I'm being surveilled, I can vote with my feet or my car. I can go shop at another, I can solicit another mall, or I can, you know, I can use Amazon, or I can choose. You have any number of choices if you feel put upon.
He encouraged San Diegans to do their homework to understand where these surveillance systems are located. KPBS learned about the privately owned license plate readers after reviewing more than 1,500 pages of police records. Scott Rodd, KPBS News.
KPBS reporter Gustavo Solis co-reported this story. Plans for new housing in Claremont and the college area took a step forward Friday. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says they would allow for the construction of more than 31,000 new homes.
Both Claremont and the college area have community plans dating back to 1989. The proposed updates to those plans would keep most of the neighborhood zoned for low-density single-family homes, but they would allow taller apartment buildings near trolley and bus stations and on commercial strip malls. Councilmember Sean Ila Rivera, whose district includes SDSU, said students make the neighborhood more vibrant and diverse.
And if we don't give those students a place to live, by zoning for more appropriate density, we will lose the thing that many in this room have said that they most appreciate about their community.
The City Council's Land Use and Housing Committee endorsed both plans, which will go before the full City Council next month. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
If you live in San Diego, you might be wondering what's going to happen to your trash bin now that the city is replacing it. Andrea De Leon works in waste reduction with the city. She says the bins are not going to the landfill. Instead, they'll become
brand new bins or other reusable transport packaging that can include pails or toters or pallets.
The process starts by cleaning the bins, then shipping them into small plastic chunks. The pieces are then sent to a plant to be turned into new products. The wheels and metal bars are also recycled. The city has collected more than 60,000 bins so far. About 750,000 should be recycled by next summer. All right, SDNN listeners, today is another episode of The Pod Behind the Package. Package is news slang for a news story. The premise for this segment is simple. Identify standout pieces and stories from my colleagues that create impact, inspiration, or some sense of feeling. Once per week, I bring in a reporter, anchor, or a video journalist for a behind-the-scenes chat. Joining me this week regarding her package with the headline, residents say Hakumba's special charm threatened by solar project is Elaine Alfaro. Here's our combo. Hey, Elaine.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
It seems like you're getting pretty bored with spots and features are more your vibe, no?
I really do love long form, and if I could take as much time as I wanted with every story, I would.
No, I totally hear that. I think a lot of journalists would say that, wouldn't we? I feel like this story was super cool because it was one of the rarest examples I've experienced of Californians going against solar energy, right? Like, I'm so used to people saying, we don't want high rises. I'm so used to people saying, I don't want a new mall or anything like that. But this is a little different because we're talking about Californians going against solar energy. A voice in your Hakumba story, a business owner, Jeff, says he isn't against all of it. He just wants a smaller version. Talk to me about this perceived special charm of Hakumba.
Yeah, and just to backtrack a little bit, like you mentioned, there's definitely that tension in this story. And you mentioned Jeff, the other resident I spoke with, Tanya, you know, she's also not against renewable or sources of renewable energy. She and him just really are concerned about the scale of this project. The town's about roughly 100 acres large. This project is more than 600 acres. And so this town kind of is having its moment. The Jeff, the business owner you mentioned, he is one of the co-owners of the hotel that is in town. And that hotel has just kind of gotten an entire facelift. It's gone through this amazing transformation, and the transformation has impacted the surrounding areas, the communal areas in the town as well. And so just with the moment that the town is having, I think that's part of where that pushback is coming from. There's concern. Critics of the project say there's concern that this project will just impact the future potential growth of the town.
Absolutely.
You know, you go down to the mineral pools and you soak, and then maybe five blocks away is a giant solar farm. Like, that community aesthetic or feel would just change a lot with these solar panels. And that's what the community definitely is concerned about.
Absolutely. Losing that small town feel for industrial.
Mm-hmm. And it is a big project. You know, the developer did reduce the scale of the project kind of throughout negotiations with the county and with the Hakumba sponsor group, who is kind of representing the community in these conversations with the county and the developer. But just with the large scale and the amount of land that it would take up, residents are concerned that that community feel and that small town feel would change with this project.
Gotcha. Elaine, listen, my cousin, my favorite little cousin, he had a really aggressive Cars phase. Merch, Lightning McQueen, bed sheets, ka-chow every time I walked in. But Radiator Springs, the made-up town in the movie Cars, dealt with a similar experience to Hakumba. Can you talk to me a little bit about those kind of connections between the two?
Sure. So in Radiator Springs, you know, Route 66 was that classic roadway that people would go through to get to Radiator Springs. And so, you know, there was that tire shop and Flo's gas station, all those little businesses that benefited from Route 66 travel. And so kind of parallel to that, in San Diego County, we have Old Highway 80. And so people would go through Hakumba on Old Highway 80 going from Imperial Valley to San Diego and so forth. And so in some ways, Hakumba parallels Radiator Springs. When the I-8 came into San Diego, drivers were redirected on the I-8 and didn't come through Old Highway 80 as much anymore. And so, you know, with Hakumba kind of having its moment and that hotel reinvigorating the tourism economy, it's kind of like how Lightning McQueen came to Radiator Springs.
We're just getting lost in the magic of the movie.
I love the movie. I love that movie. But yes, there are connections between, you know, the little town of Radiator Springs and Hakumba.
Absolutely. My last question for you, Elaine. For the people looking to sue to hopefully negotiate a smaller acreage, right? Maybe 300, 200, whatever number they have in their mind, less than 600 acres. What would the grounds be that they sue on this time? And for the $4 million, how would that be used?
So regarding the suing you mentioned, Jeff Osborne mentioned that he has gotten a legal firm or a law firm and is preparing a complaint. He didn't share the details of what that is yet. But as far as the $4 million community fund, the Hakumba Community Sponsor Group, which represents the community to county leadership, is partnering with the San Diego Foundation, which is like a philanthropic organization, to kind of determine how those funds will be used. But that sponsor group, which is made up of residents of Hakumba, will really be the ones who get to help create the guidelines on how that money will be used, which that's important that that decision comes from the community and the leaders within the community. So the sponsor group will be kind of making those decisions, but collaborating with the county and San Diego Foundation to allocate the actual funds. I also know that a portion of the money will be going to San Ysidro Health and the Desert Museum, I believe, is the other organization that will get some of the money.
Cool. Absolutely. This was Elaine Alfaro here with us once again on the pod Behind the Package. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
About 15 years ago, the San Diego Unified School District set a big goal: create a quality school in every neighborhood. For this week's Why It Matters segment, Voice of San Diego's Scott Lewis explains why that plan never materialized.
School district leaders were troubled by the fact that more than 40% of students and their families chose schools outside of their neighborhood. District officials vowed to change that, and the plan they came up with was called Vision 2020. Here was then Superintendent Cindy Martin in 2014 describing their goal.
To assume that it's better someplace else without looking in your neighborhood school, we say you're going to make a school better by engaging in your local school and be a part of it. We don't want your kids on a bus for 2 hours every morning to get to a school across town when we say there's no place like home. Look in your own backyard.
But we decided to check. After years of action to make schools that were losing families more attractive, did anything change? The short answer, no. 15 years after the commitment, almost the exact percentage of families choose schools outside of their neighborhoods. And during that period, the school district spent billions to rebuild schools. It also dialed back programs that transported kids out of their local school areas, and they also adopted more rigorous graduation requirements. Still, nearly 40,000 students avoid their neighborhood public school in favor of other options. Meanwhile, disparities in educational outcomes between different schools and enrollment declines continue, and young people entering college unprepared for that level of schooling remains a problem. For Voice San Diego, I'm Scott Lewis, and that's why it matters.
That is it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media, and I thank you for that. Have a great day.
Kinley Walsh Lawler, President and CEO of Parks California. Across California, parks are places where nature and community come together. Through Arts in California Parks, artists and culture bearers are creating murals, performances, and cultural programs with local organizations that reflect community stories and deepen our connections to these landscapes. From music in neighborhood parks to murals that celebrate heritage, these projects remind us that parks are more than just open space. They're living galleries of creativity and belonging. Learn more at parkscalifornia.org/arts.